I think those are the most common that we have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to experiment, you can go out with sweet potato or yam, and we can grab the horseradish.
Yeah.
Yes, that's another one. There's a perennial, so it stays year-round, the horseradish.
For any of these plants, are there different varieties that are more suitable to this climate? Or are they all pretty fit in well?
At the moment, we have varieties that or cultivars that fit very well with our climate.
Mm-hmm.
But however, we have to keep in mind about carrots, for instance. Carrots like dry, loose soil, so in order to develop nice taproots. So that's what we try to create in the garden, that environment for the carrot. With the radishes, once they pop up, they tend to grow half in the soil, half above the soil. And they're quite robust, actually. There's not much pest. The one that we were forgetting is about beetroots. That's very interesting, because everybody thinks that the beetroots grow underneath the ground, but actually when they start making the root itself, they're above ground. They're sitting above. The main issue that we have with that here in Burnaby is the leaf miner. It's a tiny little larvae that gets into the leaf and start eating all the flesh inside the leaf, leaving just the skin of the leaf. And that's the only thing that we do is just remove the leaf that's infected and dispose in the garden, in the composter. Yeah.
So you mentioned a few weeks ago the importance of being a good custodian for your garden. And so how often are you going around and inspecting for these little pests?
Almost every time that I'm watering, at least twice a week.
Yeah.
I'm in the garden, I'm just getting a close contact with it. When I'm watering, I'm just observing the plant.
Yeah.
And as well, that's the best time to get in close contact with your vegetables.
Excellent. And when do we harvest these ones?
So carrots, if we plant now, we'll be harvesting almost at the end of the summer. And beets, it's around 90 days, 120 days that we are harvesting. Yeah. So each 3 months,
And how about with the potatoes?
Potatoes, it has been kind of a strange weather, but I hope by the end of June we can have some early potatoes,
Great. So one thing about potatoes, and this is probably a really obvious question to you as a gardener, but not to me as someone who shops in the store. There's different varieties that we see at this store, whether it's russets and Yukon Gold. Are those really different varieties, or are some of them? Because I remember, I was growing up, my mom always called, in the spring there were new potatoes. Are those? So I guess what I'm wondering about, are those all different varieties, or is it a matter of when we're harvesting?
There are different varieties based on how we cook them. So good for baking, good for frying, good for mashing.
Yeah.
And that's why we have these different types, how we use new potatoes. All these varieties gives us new potatoes, which means that the skin you can peel very easily just with your thumbs.
Yeah.
So when we harvest for preserving over the winter, we make sure that the plant has died and the potato is left in the soil for at least a week. So the skin of the potato gets harder.
Right.
And that's how you can protect the and store for a long time. So, and then we have the color of the potatoes: red potatoes, white potatoes, yellow potatoes.
Yeah.
Originally, potatoes comes from Peru, which we have over 2,000 varieties of potatoes: yellow potatoes, red, even purple potatoes. So, and fingering ones as well, which are the shape of the potato.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The varieties that we have in here, they have been adjusted for our weather, which is rainfall and rainy weather. And original potatoes growing in cloud forest, in cloud areas, very high in the Andes.
Yeah.
But here we try to optimize these months of summer where we have lots of sun. So we have more than 6 hours of sun during the day. So that's why the plant really develops very fast in this short of time.
Yeah.
Because it's a plant that requires lots of sun.
Great. Well, that's a lot of harvesting coming up for all these these wonderful root vegetables.
Yes, and it's the time to harvest, and as well as the time to start thinking how I'm going to process this food.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just go to the garden and we harvest, and then we bring to the kitchen, and then we are so tired that later we forget. And when we realize all these leaves are wilted. So when we are harvesting, we should keep in mind that harvest the amount that later you can process.
Yeah.
Don't overdo it. Because we know that personally, sometimes I get tired with all this produce to be processed. It's like, I'm so tired, I cannot have energy. Particularly with leaves, after two hours after harvesting, needs to go into a cool area.
Right.
Needs to be in the refrigerator for storage.
Great. Well, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yep. Tell us more about Embark.
So Embark is a nonprofit organization based on SFU Burnaby campus, and we work on climate equity and food justice, and the gardens are part of that. You can find us more information about us on embarksustainability.org, and also our Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube channels at embarksustain.
Great. And are you still accepting applicants for your summer gardening cohort?
Thank you for the reminding. Well, we are full capacity.
Oh, excellent.
We are starting today, and we have 13 participants.
Great.
So we will be working with them all over the summer. So we have 12 weeks to explore and be hands-on in the garden.
If people are interested and they missed out this time, will there be a fall cohort?
Yes, a fall cohort will start at the end of September. Right. And that cohort will run for 6 weeks. Yeah. So we will finish before the first frost.
Right.
So it's just very short, 6 weeks.
Yep. Excellent. Thank you so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week to talk more about gardening with Embark.
Certainly. Bye.
I'm Madeline Taylor. You're listening to a documentary produced for CJSF 90.1 FM's Making Time for Radio project. This is I Am a Fruit Tree.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me.
Simon Fraser University has a bit of a reputation. It's known to be dark, the architecture is often compared to a prison, and everyone complains about the commute. Because we all commute, it's hard to make friends on the mountain. As a student, it's easy to let this stereotype dictate your experience. We fall into the tyranny of the urgent. It's tempting to plug in, power through, and ignore the world around you. Thankfully, there are characters at SFU who break this mold every day.
I'm Shiraz Ramji, born in Tanzania, East Africa, on 10th December 1948. At present, I'm 66 years old. That is about 24,000 days, because I love to count my age in days, and I can celebrate my birthday every day. I'm an educator. I'm trained as a teacher and also as a gerontologist, and I call myself a justice-friendly pacifist.
Shiraz is very well known at SFU for a few different reasons. He has lectured, worked, and studied all over campus since 1994. I first met Shiraz when I was a student. He was standing in a main concourse with a smile, giving out copies of his poetry. He wears sports clothes emblazoned with SFU logos and walks like he's late for something. What is striking about him is his lack of pretense. He doesn't expect anything from you when he offers his poetry. It's simply an open invitation to engage. I found this so unusual and couldn't quite figure out what his passion was. As it turns out, Shiraz is a peace activist. He told me he's been writing poetry since he was a young boy. He calls it part of his activism and uses poetry to start conversations and spread his message of justice-friendly peace.
It was mostly grade 5 or 6 somewhere where the teacher said, "You speak like a poet." I didn't know what he meant, but he says, "Write whatever you are speaking." And he would read it and he said, "This is poetry and you should write it all the time." One day I realized the price of photocopy at my student union was 4 cents. So I said, oh, I can afford that. So I said, okay, I'll spend $2 every day for my poetry. So I started printing them. And then I started sharing them. That was about 12 years ago.
Shiraz doesn't only do this at SFU. He approaches people in every part of his daily life.
That's always a challenge, whom I should ask. But sometimes it can be like this morning, there was a woman on the SkyTrain, she was reading about elementary educators. So I said, I am an educator. So I asked her, do you read poetry and where do you study? And I said, I write poetry. So I gave her one. So it depends. If I know, like SFU students, is very easy. So I just tell them, I write poetry. Do you read poetry? And then they say yes. So I said, take one. And if they don't want it, then I say, thank you. Okay, next. But even if I didn't have poetry, I would just talk to people. So that has always been my lifestyle.
Back at SFU, Shiraz took me around to some of his favorite parts of campus. On this little walking tour, I discovered that homemade hummus is another tool he uses to connect.
Hi, here she is. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hello, Shiraz.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Yeah.
Well, it's so nice to see you.
Nice. I'm thinking of your ice cream all the time.
I love it.
So my name is Sarah Manassian, and I'm the fitness programmer at SFU Recreation. When I think of Shiraz, I just think of this warm, smiling guy. He would come into the fitness center, and he'd always bring us pita and homemade hummus, and excited about, like, oh, it's Sunday, Shiraz is coming in, he's going to bring his, like, pita and homemade hummus, and we just loved that. That's probably one of my fondest memories, because it would happen every weekend, like, without stop. And I think that kind of made our fitness center more of a community too, because people would actually come in on the weekends to, because they knew Shiraz was going to come to bring pita and hummus, and they come in on the weekends, so we'd all sit around and eat the hummus that Shiraz would bring.
He got this reaction constantly. What I wanted to know was what in his life led Shiraz to be so open with his community. After getting to know him better, I started to understand the root of his activism.
Well, you see, when I grew up in Tanzania, I was born in 1948, so I started schooling in 54. And so it was still part of British colony, and so you see all the racism and segregation of all the different racial groups and so on. So you knew what was colonialism, what is dictatorship, and you hear about all the wars and stuff like that. There were schools which were for European settlers, and then there were Asian schools, and there were African schools. Yeah, like even the buses, they had segregated place. You had to, like, you got the movies, you had to stand up because you had to sing the God Save the King and stuff like that. So we all knew that, and the whole glorification of Britain, how good it is. And it was legally that way, but it... So some people assimilated with the whole thing and accepted their second-class status. I wasn't very keen on that, so it was there all the time.
Tanzania achieved independence from British colonial rule in 1961. To the south, Mozambique was under Portuguese colonial rule. They endured a decade of anti-colonial struggle, followed by a civil war through the 1970s and 80s. In the 1970s, Shiraz taught in Tanzania. There, he supported the African Liberation Movement and its activists.
It was part of the anti-colonial struggle in Tanzania itself. We were quite influenced by Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Angela Davis. So it was at a global level as well as local level, there was the whole issue of anti-apartheid.
These experiences of colonial violence, segregation, and oppression have made Shiraz very aware of the dangers of focusing on difference.
I mean, I met a lot of the present and the past leaders of South Africa or Mozambique and so on. So they would come to our school and give a talk. So it has been very much part of my struggle, yeah.
By the early 1990s, after decades of working in education, in medical research, in public health, and in refugee advocacy in East Africa, Shiraz was looking for a change. Both of his parents had passed away, and his partner was killed in a bicycle accident while studying in London.
Well, I was in Africa at that time, and she was finishing her master's in nutrition. And that's when it happened. So we were studying together at London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. So I got the news from family and so on of that happened, because she was going to join me. So that was quite tragic. But then I didn't know what to tell people, because I'd moved from Tanzania to Zimbabwe. So they didn't know her, right? So it was very hard to tell people. So that was on time when I was on my own. At that level, I'm more of a private person. Like, I wouldn't talk much about these things, generally, unless people ask me. So when it came to 94, my mission was at least to be involved with anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa, and then independence came in April 94. Mother had passed, my father had also passed in Africa. After the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa was become more independent struggles, right, I wanted a break. And my sister was very ill, so I came to Canada.
Shiraz's transition to Canada was eased by his entry into community life at SFU. A student and an educator for his whole life, he was comfortable at school.
So here is our library. So this is what I call the holy place, the holy land, SFU holy land. It's for everybody.
Shiraz talks a lot about globalizing friendship and how this can be done through sharing food with your community. Food was a central theme in all of the conversations I had. This is Celeste. She taught Shiraz when he took a movement class at SFU.
There is an unforgettable story. Every student in the class is required to teach the rest of the class a dance. It could be a circle dance, a folk dance, but they have to make it up from scratch. Shiraz taught us a dance called the hummus dance. It was like a group dance around food globalization, and we danced the hummus, we made the hummus through dance. The joy that he brought to this piece and the love that he brought to this piece was so truly moving.
Shiraz doesn't believe in the idea of strangers. He thinks it allows for fear and separation.
Because I don't have many family members, so I just interact with people as if they are part of the family. Mm-hmm. So when I'm going in the morning exercise, I'm filling up with the community. And so it's a way to break the barrier of being lonely or isolated.
To be honest, I don't know what the words are for it. I feel a feeling when I think of Shiraz. I think maybe the thing that's different about him is he'll engage anybody and everybody. He's just so welcoming. He's so open. He'll come up, he'll give you a hug, he'll speak smiles. Have you read my poetry lately? Here's what's going on. Do you want some hummus? I'm going to bring you some food. Like, it's every time that you see him.
As I said, I always want to know, first to create that community and make people not be afraid of me or anybody else. But also to hear stories of people in terms of not necessarily private stories, but how do they look at life and how do they respond to people like me. So it gives me a feeling that there are many people who want to create that community, but somebody has to start. Almost every case, I'm the one who starts, and then the ball starts rolling.
I love the sense of his deep curiosity for life. To me, that's what SFU was all about. Now I look around at SFU and I see them all. They look absolutely, everyone looks bored to death. You get Shiraz walking through here. He just has a love of life. And you know, it doesn't even need a cell phone.
So it turns out that Shiraz isn't well known at SFU because of his longevity. It's because he reminds people of what they really want from campus. Community and a sense of belonging.
SFU is a happy place, and it's also a place with some challenges. Happiness in a sense, there's a diversity of people. It can be sadness because the education system, a lot of education is very Eurocentric. And there are a lot of slogans like critical learning or critical thinking, but essentially it's more conformist education. So it can be challenging for you. I normally consider every person is a fruit tree, so I said just enjoy the fruit.
Why a fruit tree?
Well, I was surrounded. I grew up with so many fruit trees. Papayas grow in 9 months. I used to plant a lot of fruit trees. And I think it's a universal food. There's no recipe for fruit trees. It's just fruit. So I thought as a global citizen, it fits in my narrative.
What does community mean to you?
Community is like what I call the fruit salad, right? where you have a mixture of everybody around. So it's much of a collective experience. I mean, there are a collective experience in SFU, for example. It's a community, right?
His outlook is contagious. But here's the thing. What is a community? A community is a group of people with something in common, but it's often described as a sense. You feel a sense of community. It's not something that geographic locations just have on their own. Shiraz's approach is to make every space into a community.
I believe we all have the capacity to touch into something that is invisible, that is greater than us, on however you articulate it. But it is a love that infuses far beyond the imagination and far beyond our daily living, because our daily living is fraught with so many difficulties. And I think Shiraz has probably had experiences enough to have to empty himself, where he then is tapped into this greater source of love. And I'm not going to articulate certain labels around that, but I believe he embodies love.
I tell people, I believe that I'm not the only Shiraz in the world. There are many people in Shiraz in the world. And, for example, I can relate to you because I see Shiraz in you and you see yourself in me, right? So don't assume you're alone.
His poetry is not only in print, it's the impression he leaves on people. His embodiment of the fruit tree allows him to connect and create openness and curiosity in the people he meets. He makes eye contact, simple conversation, and impacts SFU by building community through the simple act of constant and unapologetic engagement.
That's what I tell people. Take your part. If you need help, come and have a tea with me.
Well, on that note, can you share a poem or two with us?
Yeah, okay, I'll share with you the one, my favorite one, which is my autobiography of as a child. It's called We Are Mother Earth. I'm a fruit tree. I'm a fruitful tree. I'm a banana tree. I grow bananas shaped like human lips to share and tell stories with my global friends. I'm a cherry tree. I grow cherries. Like human.
This documentary was produced with the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I would also like to thank Shiraz Ramji, Celeste Snober, Sarah Manassian, and Victoria Haraway for their voices and stories.
She'll always be home to me.
Annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 19th to 23rd. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring New York experimental hardcore trio Show Me the Body as guest curator, incisive Chicago rapper Mick Jenkins, Los Angeles indie rockers Cherry Glazer, Canadian indie rock sensation Ecstasy, genre-bending rap artist Carrie Faux, Montreal-based hip-hop trio Planet Giza, 70s Zamrock revivalist Witch, trailblazing Argentine singer-songwriter Juanita Molina, and many, many more. Plus, there's over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.